It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast?
It's National Orgasm Day, time for us to masturbate for the next hour. How you doing, Will?
I plan to celebrate accordingly.
I think there's only one way to celebrate.
So, I've spoken before on the show about my disdain of 3D films. I can't really handle them.
Right.
Well, I was invited to a free screening of Wolverine, which is a movie I barely decided to go see for free. And I'm like, okay, you know, I got nothing to do. I'll go to this free screening. I show up, they hand me a pair of 3D glasses.
The indignity.
I know. I almost ran, but instead I watched this movie with the glasses over my glasses, as usual, and I had a fucking headache. The giant headache. It added nothing to the movie, and it's a movie that it seems like any little bit would have added more to it, but not the case.
Well, I mean, you always, whenever there's a 2D option or a 3D option, you always, no matter what. I mean, we wanted to go see Fruitvale Station in 3D, and you just opted for the 2D version.
I said, no,
I need to see it the way it was meant to be seen.
Yeah, that and the new Woody Allen film in 3D. Yeah. Couldn't deal with that. You know, the picture is dim.
Right, because it filters out a lot of the light, so it reduces the brightness of the image.
And this is why I hate every technological breakthrough.
Okay.
It's not better for us, it's worse. What's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
Well, folks, we had a lot of new Facebook likes. I want to thank everyone, but it's not over yet. Now the road to 237.
Yes.
It marches on. We will continue to harangue you until every person on the planet likes the Facebook page.
We're going to do a lot of haranguing.
Yeah, and if we don't get it, we're just, you know, I've been looking into it. I've been talking to some people. I'm seriously considering about 10,000 bots from the North Korean black market, so we may have a big jump in numbers soon. A lot of egg shapes.
I like this idea because if you people, the people who supposedly love this show, don't like us, the North Koreans will.
Right. And then beyond our own self-interest, I want to remind you all that Dylan Brody's book, Laughs Last, is still available for purchase. I'm about 100 pages into it, and it's excellent so far. I highly recommend it. And our guest last week, John Frechette, his book, The Front Man, is also available for purchase from Black Hill Press.
Black Hill Press. Yeah. I believe you can get both of these on Amazon.
Yes, and so also North Korean black market.
And the North Korean black market. So you can either go
Dylan,
to Amazon.
Dylan Brody's huge in Pyongyang.
He supports that regime.
Yeah.
Dylan Brody does. Who's our sponsor this week?
Well, Will, do you like Bruce Springsteen?
Yes.
Bob Dylan?
Yes.
How about the Foo Fighters?
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, he's all right.
All right. Well, guess what? These struggling artists need our help. Due to the changing commercial and artistic landscape, these brilliant and accomplished musicians cannot afford to write a single note of new music until we all contribute to their Kickstarter campaigns. For every $1 million of our donations, they will release one new song available for purchase on iTunes and Amazon. It's a new and frightening landscape out there for some of America's most brilliant musicians, so give people, give until it hurts, because if you don't, it truly will be the day the music died.
I am very nervous, and I'm going to empty out my bank account.
Poor Bruce Springsteen, he can't buy anything. He needs our money. No one will support his artistic endeavors.
I believe in his vision, and I think he's going to make it. So, yeah, I'm going to donate. I'm going to donate today. On the show today, can Carlos Danger become mayor of New York? Steroids in baseball.
What?
Who knew? And an enemy that's, quite frankly, is ruining a good friend of mine's life. And I'm gonna speak up for said friend. But first, we're very excited to have with us. He runs a great storytelling show / podcast himself called Funny 'Cause It's True. Kevin McGeehan.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Very excited to have you here.
So. Oh, I could not be more excited to be here.
Oh, well, somehow I feel you could be more excited.
Well, I mean, I could, but I'm not going to try. I'm going to stay at this level and just peak.
It is National Orgasm Day, so
I've decided to hold it until the last possible moment of the day.
So you're a tantric.
I'm a tantric guy. Yeah. I like to party in that way.
So, Kevin, I met you a while back at Tattletales. I saw you perform.
Mm-hmm.
A very funny story about a teacher who was propositioning you for a better grade?
The long and short of it was, I was in junior college, and my professor, Professor Robinson, a man in his 60s, I had to go in and ask him for extra credit at the end of the term because I wasn't doing that great in it. He says, no, I don't usually do that. And I say, okay. And then we keep talking about the day of what we had in class. And then he says, oh, are you walking to the parking lot? And I say, yeah, I am. And then we go out to the parking lot, continuing our scintillating conversation about what we had discussed that day in class until we get to the edge of the parking lot. And he stops and says, so this grade is kind of important to you. And I say, yeah, it is. And he said, well, I'd like to have sex with you. Now, to back up just a little bit.
That bluntly, too.
That bluntly. I mean, just right out there, just overt. Just he was going for it. To back up and to show what he was propositioning in that moment, at the time, my style was all based on whatever Johnny Depp was wearing in that particular season of 21 Jump Street.
So you had the paperclip in the ear? Or...
well, I had two gold hoop earrings.
Yeah.
Tattered jeans, old t-shirt, long bangs, and about 128 pounds. So to back up, he says, well, I'd like to have sex with you. And I responded in the most honest sentence I have ever uttered in my life, which was, I was kind of hoping I could just write something. And at that point, he turned to me and he said, don't ever tell anyone about this. And he walked away, and I kept that promise for 3 minutes.
Which, to be fair, I think is longer than I would have been able to. I held out.
You just, it didn't even matter if you knew the person. You just looked for another human being.
The first one I found, in the days before cell phones, had it been a cell phone
well, that's
era?
True. Yeah, you would have.
Oh, immediately.
You should have said, Mr. Robinson, are you trying to seduce me?
If I had the reference level at that time, I really wish I had, but I did not have that in my wheelhouse at that time.
It's always, you know, you always come up with these things after
so many years later.
The jerk store called, and they're all
and they're
out of you.
Well, you're the number one bestseller. That was great, and that's an example of what I got to see. And after I heard you tell that story, I said, we have to have you on the show, because it was very funny. So before we get into your show, let's get a little bit of your origin story. Like,
okay.
You're not from Los Angeles, or you are from Los Angeles?
I'm not. I've been here about 3.5 years.
Okay.
Oh. My formative years, my first professional years were Chicago. I moved there in 95. In 2000, I got hired by Second City, and then I was just an actor there for 2000 to 2009, 8.
Okay.
And that was what I did. I did the touring company. The business theater, I did everything you can do in that building, and that was how I made my living. And then life took some detours.
As it does.
And then I've been out here about 3.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so my main formative years were Chicago, Second City, improv, sketch.
And when you came out here, did you start doing improv as well?
Yeah, I've been doing it 20 years, so it wasn't something I was...
I feel like once you do Second City, Chicago,
yeah,
everything else is kind of second tier.
Now it's just something I need to do.
Okay.
It's just so ingrained now that I need a bowling night to put in that.
Yeah. It's just, well, Chris Hardwick has one, so.
Yeah, like I need that thing where I go and I get to improvise and just because to stay sharp and I really just enjoy it. I teach. The main thing I do is I teach out here now.
Oh.
I teach a bunch of classes at Second City. I do a drop-in. People can come in and just work out different things. But yeah, I've been teaching about 10 years and this is just what I... No.
So it's a great place to like you said, try out new things in the teaching. And then, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that going on.
Oh, my gosh. I am just a tapestry.
It's true.
You pull one thread and it all unravels.
Oh, my gosh.
So now then I have a question. How did you start Funny 'Cause It's True?
Well, explain the format of Funny 'Cause It's True as well.
So what I have done, do you guys know The Moth?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you know The Moth Story Slams in L.A.?
Yeah, well, I haven't been, but I know.
So basically their format is they choose people, and then one person emerges a winner because three judges out in the audience choose a winner. But the thing is, you never know if you're being chosen to go for The Moth. So you go, you prepare, you work really hard, and then you never know if your name's going to be called, and then by the end, like, ah, oh, man.
It's like The Price is Right.
I always liken it to Trivial Pursuit, where you're trying so hard to get in the center, and then once you finally get that...
Yeah. They hit you with the sports question.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then you get hit with the sports question. But I didn't always get to go, but I was preparing these stories. So the origin of Funny 'Cause It's True is I wanted to create something where I knew I'd go every time. And I just took all the things of the Moth Story Slam that I like and got rid of all the things that I didn't, which was just the competitive element. So it's still the same basic thing. It's myself. I tell two stories, one at the beginning, one at the end.
Ah.
And then I bring in two ringers, two people that I've just predetermined. And then the other four spots are chosen at random that night of people who sign up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. And you always need a ringer.
Always need a ringer.
Yeah,
just
because
to...
you got
to
keep the energy of the show going.
I got a show
you don't
to
know
run.
What you're going to get.
I got a show to run, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just my ace in the hole.
And then so each show then has a topic.
Uh-huh.
And each speaker gets, including yourself, gets 5 minutes.
5 to 6.
5 to 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Now, they find the topic out when they get there and be like, oh, I have, or do they know ahead of time, like, oh, this week it's going to be happiness or whatever?
If we are friends on Facebook or you like the Funny 'Cause It's True page, you are inundated with the theme for the
okay.
2 weeks leading up to the show.
Okay, so you have time to formulate your story.
Yes.
Okay.
Next week's theme is pandering.
Okay, and you said 5 to 6 minutes. What made you settle on that time of like
anything beyond that to me gets it can become masturbatory.
Okay,
because some people just kind of talk just to talk as opposed to they need that 7 minutes to actually tell that story. But for me, it's you can tell what needs to be told in 5 minutes.
Well,
you don't get bogged down in exposition.
It's you're absolutely right because I've been to a lot of these shows and some people get up there. And I've also seen some people get up there after a couple of drinks.
Sure.
And these stories go on a little long
right.
sometimes if you don't have a...
If you don't know where you're going with it, the main thing, the ones that really stand out to me are the ones where there's a definitive ending. The person knows exactly where they're going with it, as opposed to a lot of stories where it's just recounting memories, and
yeah.
they're in no particular order, but it's just kind of tangents that don't necessarily... are not necessary for the end.
So you mean you don't like it when 9 minutes into a story they go, oh, did I mention at this point my mother had died?
I'm not a big fan of that because they should have led with that if that's where they're going.
You know, everybody's got their own taste and style.
Sure, sure.
Well, you know what I think is interesting? You must obviously rehearse and work on these, like, as a routine, telling the story, because I noticed in the story that you just told, I heard you did that story, and I mean, you hit all the same moments, and this was even a more abbreviated version
yeah.
of it, but you hit them all, like, exactly the same. So how long does it take you to, like, get a story down where you feel comfortable getting up there and unleashing it to the audience?
There are stories that I'm much stronger with than others, but I practice a lot, but it's not necessarily by myself, but I have a lot of very... great friends that will indulge me, where we'll sit and have coffee and I'll say, may I tell you a story? And then I'll tell them the story that I'm planning on telling that week and then just work it out with them. And then whatever I like with it, then I'll go and tell another person and just kind of evolve it over time until I put it on stage and it's at least in a nicer honed gem.
Now, the people that get up and tell their stories, are they all doing it from memory or do many times they have it written out and they know it'll run about 5 to 6 minutes?
I have never stated that you can't have material up there, but people just never bring it up, so I don't say anything. So, yeah, everybody's just telling it from memory.
Okay.
Is when I guess, and we were talking to Dylan Brody 2 weeks ago about this very thing, because I was saying I've been this is a world I've been getting into. I've performed Tattletales once from the Ped Show, and I've done mostly like essay stuff, and I haven't gotten up there without, like, kind of the net of the page.
Sure.
Maybe it's because I'm also kind of in love with my word. Like, I word everything very carefully in that, and I don't know, but I've been thinking about trying to get up there, but I'm afraid I'll fall into the trap where what I can do at a party and tell a fun story turns into rambling once I'm on a stage.
And
sure.
also, when you're at a party, you can use your hands, you can gesticulate. I feel like when you're on stage and you have to hold a microphone if you're not used to it, that changes your rhythm, you know, and there's the added elements of if you're not used to having or limited used to having a light on you or having an audience,
sure.
you know, it's one thing to tell it to 5 people. It's another thing to tell it to 50 plus people or whatever it is. So then where was the point where you said, okay, I'm going to take these stories and now grab some of the ones that I like and put them together into a podcast? Or was that always the idea from the beginning?
It was not. It okay. was me starting to realize a year into the show, man, these are gone.
Yeah.
That there's no recording of these, then it became, I need to record these each time, and then it became just a natural progression of, why not put these out there? Which I find interesting now that I'm, I think, 36 episodes in. Wow, there's a lot of my life, because I tell one on each podcast that I am a stalker's dream come true. That if you want to learn about me, just go to a podcast and listen to the last 6 minutes of every episode, and you can get a...
Nice... You heard it here first, folks.
Yep.
If you want to stalk Kevin, just go find Funny Because It's True.
His social security number, your
PIN
code.
Oh, I tell that in a story. It's called Social Security Number.
Whole story is 6 minutes of you explaining each number.
Oh,
the,
and just giving mnemonic devices for each so everybody can remember it. It's
it's funny because I've been thinking the same thing because this is episode 77 of the podcast, and I've said a lot of personal shit on this podcast, or I've noticed I've said stuff about, like, I went on this date with this girl. It's like, what if she decides to listen?
Sure.
Like, what is, but, you know,
what
you
I think
can't
is
worry
funny
about
is
that.
I'm also on the same 77th episode, and if you were to listen to every episode, you would only know the silos of information about me, but you wouldn't be able to construct a full portrait.
They wouldn't even necessarily know your real name.
That's true. So you would know nothing about me.
The one thing I never talk about, though, or never try to blatantly talk about, is like my day job, my job outside of this, because then I'm afraid.
But they could piece it together if they've listened.
Well, yeah. But I'm also banking on nobody who would do me any harm about my full-time job would piece it together listening to like 77 episodes.
I have a rule. I have two rules. One is I never use real names. I always come up with clever nicknames that are just easy to remember, so when they come up again in the story, then it stands out. And two, a story can never be led by emotion. It always has to be, I'm an objective observer, and I just so happen to be one of the main characters, as opposed to, man, let me tell you about what happened last night. I was so mad. I mean, I'm just telling it to tell it because I want people on my side. It needs to be, here is just this story.
There was a man who was so mad one evening.
Right.
Well, have you been, since you put it up as a podcast, have you noticed you've been getting any more attention, or people coming to the show more? Is it, like, who's, like...
The joke I make about myself is I teach at Second City, and I do a lot of stuff in improv, and the joke about myself is this. In a very, very, very small part of Los Angeles, I'm extremely popular.
Well, there you go.
So in that sense, a lot of people come to it. It's been, if there's one thing I've discovered, is that people naturally like talking about themselves. This is a forum where you are allowed to talk to people that are willing to listen to you and have all attention given to you. My contention is always that anyone can go up there and knock it out of the park once. They have some story that's just fantastic, the one that they always tell. The trick is, can you do it again and again? And I think that all goes down to how you tell the story. Because there's a lot of times I look like the way I construct it is what's fun for me.
Yeah.
Is how is this going to pay off? How is this one going to be different? How do I ape from authors that I like of their formats of telling stories and stuff like that?
What I've found in the few open mics or storytelling things or essay shows that I've done, I honestly don't think what I'm saying or what's written down is the funniest thing in the world, but I figured out a way to deliver it or a cadence in my voice or something. I don't know. People seem to laugh at things I say because of the way I say it.
I'm the exact opposite.
people
just reciting a dry
I'm right in the middle of both.
Yeah.
Look at that. This is a perfect pairing, the three of us.
Well, you know, my issue is that when I'm writing a story to tell, I'm also writing it as a written piece.
Uh-huh.
So it tends to be written very specifically
and
very evocatively, which I'm still trying to kind of find that balance between taking off my writer's hat and putting on my performance hat. But it's hard because my first instinct is as a writer and not as much as a teller.
Yeah.
So I need to find that groove. You know,
I have trouble with that groove sometimes because a lot of times I'm better saying it out loud as opposed to writing it down.
Okay.
Yeah, with working with someone, talking to someone, watching their reaction, I can feed off that as opposed to by myself where I'm watching a blank page and a cursor blinking in front of me and I'm just, how is this sentence going to be perfect?
Well, the way Will said how in him it's in the telling of the story.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's also in the telling of the story, but in the way that I phrase the information, the way that I divulge out, the way that I'll drip out a piece, or the way I'll build one misery on top of another very carefully, you know. So that's kind of where my focus is. It's how do I frame this? How do I approach it? the story in and of itself. I'm working on one right now about, it's more of an essay about my lifetime love of reading.
Yeah.
And it's not, that in and of itself is not entertaining. It's the situations I got myself into because of just my obsession with books as a child.
Sure.
So, it's like you got yourself into that Twilight Zone situation that Burgess Meredith had.
Yes, exactly.
You break your glasses and all the time
in the world.
Can I throw in something really quick?
Sure,
going on that of the wording and such, I have a one-man show. The first and only one-man show I've done at this point, but it's an hour-long piece of me just telling one story. But it was a very big story and something that happened to me, which was the aforementioned detours that eventually led me here.
To Los Angeles.
But something happened that I just decided to write down everything that happened during it, and the show came out of that. Here is my pitch, or my elevator pitch for the show.
Okay.
In October of 2009, I was detained by U.S. Customs and Border Protection when a dog smelled an illegal substance on my body. I was taken to a back room where I was thoroughly and embarrassedly searched. One customs agent, a man who threatened my imminent incarceration, went through my backpack and he found my journal from 2006. He pulled it out and audaciously began reading excerpts from it, and very quickly he discovered a startling connection between the two of us. At this point, he changed his tune completely and made it his goal to get me released without charges. This is the story of what he read in that journal.
So where can the people come hear this, see this show, hear this show?
You can hear, it's one of the episodes on the podcast.
Okay.
It's episode 30. It's called Four Aces. But it's the... But here's but going back to the whole thing of talking about, and the reason I bring this up is that the story itself, it's not, this is just a tease to get you in, but the story itself is this. In January of 2006, my mother was diagnosed as terminal, given 6 months to a year, and she asked me to come home and live with her. For 5 months, I was with her final 5 months. Because we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that this was it.
Yeah.
That as opposed to letting that just crush us, we decided to embrace it. And based on something we saw in the West Wing, it made us look at this thing completely different. So we actually planned this elaborate party for her for the end of her life, and people from all through her life came to it, and she got her first and only standing ovation in her life. It was a fantastic thing. And then she died 8 days later. The journey to that party is extremely funny.
Okay.
Okay.
So that is the whole story in a nutshell. But because I don't want to advertise, here is this story about my mama dying.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing about the customs and such.
Okay.
Now, the problem I had from the beginning was, what is my reason for telling this story to an audience? What's my why? That, is it just indulgent because I need a cathartic moment to tell this story to people? And what? But that wasn't good enough for me. But when I got busted at customs 3 years later, it finally made sense to me because, essentially, I had the proverbial gun to my head of this guy asking me, what is this thing that I'm reading? And then me telling him, so this is the story of me telling a customs agent about this. So it bookends the show with that, but that was my reason for telling it, is that here is the story of me telling this customs agent this story of this.
I think you just admitted that you're Kaiser Soze.
I think I did. Yeah.
Well, this is great. I got to hear this story. You said we can hear it on episode 30?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So homework, people.
Before we move on to the topics, tell everybody where they could see Funny 'Cause It's True and where they could listen to the podcast. Okay, plug away.
All right, plug away. So every other Tuesday at Second City in Hollywood at 6560 Hollywood Boulevard is Funny 'Cause It's True. The next one is August 13th, I say with a mild question mark until I look
it up.
Sounds
about right.
That is exactly right. So August 13th at 10 o'clock, and then it's every Tuesday beyond that. Go to Funny 'Cause It's Funny, C-U-Z, It's True on Facebook. Like it, and then you will be inundated with dates and posters and such. The podcast is on iTunes. You can go to Funny, C-U-Z, It's True. You can get all the episodes for free, and you can also go to the Comedy Podcast Network, which produces the show. You can go to their website and get a bunch of other podcasts as well. How's that for a plug?
That is a terrific plug. And if you are a good listener of the podcast, you have already liked the Facebook page because you've gone to it already from our Facebook page.
Which you've already liked because you're a good listener. It's a vicious circle.
Yeah, so it all goes around there. And you've probably already listened to episode 30 because... You know, you're psychic, and you knew that before you listened to this episode.
And then can they follow you on Twitter? Are you active on there?
I am. McGeehan Kevin, at McGeehan Kevin.
Okay.
There you go. So, want to transition to some of what's going on in the world. Sean, I thought maybe you could help us at the beginning here.
Because I'm a sexting creep.
Yeah, exactly. You're close to it. You're a Snapchatting creep.
I have a Snapchatting creep.
Explain to the listeners who may live under a rock who Carlos Danger is.
Carlos Danger is the gnome de slut, or actually gnome de smut, I should say, of a disgraced congressman and soon-to-be-disgraced mayoral candidate of New York, Anthony Weiner. You couldn't come up with a better name. And recently, new allegations. If you don't remember, he had to leave Congress.
And how could you forget?
Yeah, he tweeted some photos of his befabricked penis to a woman. And he said it was all behind him, and he went through the public shaming. Then he went through the People magazine rehabilitation, and new photos, new texts, new everything surfaced.
No. Now, these photos aren't recent, no. But they're also since his apology.
Right. So, either way, this guy's a creep, and he had been leading in the polls, and not so much
I don't
much
think he was ever leading, but he was close. I think Christine Quinn, who I think is poised to become New York's first lesbian mayor, she's got my vote, except that I don't live there anymore.
Right, so she really doesn't
so
have
she
it.
Doesn't. But no. She's got my support.
There it is.
She's New York City Council, Speaker of New York City Council. She's still, I think, the front runner, but I gotta ask this, and I'll ask you, Kevin. Would people vote for this guy? Do you think people are actually gonna vote for this guy? Because he's not backing out of the election.
He's going full in.
He's going full in.
And would you vote for somebody who sent dick pics around town?
There's really no reason that it shouldn't be a deterrent, but it would turn me off completely that. I don't know. He just seems so... Carlos Danger.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that, I always think back to the Family Guy bit of their Empire Strikes Back episode where Peter has to be called Carlos Spicy Wiener. So every time I hear Carlos Danger, that's what I always think of, is that bit from Family Guy.
I bet he wanted to go with Carlos Spicy Wiener, but it was too close to his
well,
actual...
Yeah, it was probably already taken, too.
Yeah.
You know, my issue is that... Listen, I'm not saying politicians are the most upright of moral citizens, but there's just something so unrepentant about this guy, and there was always this sense that he was just a politician. He never really did much as a congressman. Felt like he enjoyed
well, he
being...
He was a loudmouth, but he was a loudmouth for the left, and that's my side, so I kind of liked him in that regard.
But it feels as if it's not like he has great ideas or a vision for what he thinks New York City could be. I feel like he wants to be mayor because he's a career politician and you got to run for something.
Well, let me say this. Let me play devil's advocate for a
okay.
second. Because I think the biggest problem and why I probably wouldn't vote for him is just the bad judgment.
Right.
But as far as what he did, and as far as that he even resigned from Congress, he never did anything illegal. He didn't technically cheat on his wife. And his wife... I don't want to say seems cool with it, but she doesn't seem... Huma Abedin, who works for Hillary Clinton...
Yes.
She never seemed annoyed. Like that... Like, it didn't seem like that big of a deal to her. This is all I'm saying, at least on the
maybe
public side.
Maybe some women just enjoy being this close to power.
I think it goes back to what you said with just... It's bad judgment. The fact that us as a nation, in just simpler times, concentrated on a president getting a blowjob. That was our news cycle for so
yeah.
long. But that is not a big deal, but we focused on that. But because he did apologize and did say, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm done, and then to do it again, it just seems...
And also Bill Clinton was in office, and he wasn't running for re-election.
But wait, here's the thing. Anthony Weiner was in office of the Congress and had to... Bill Clinton showed just as bad judgment when he was president,
but
he shouldn't be getting blown by an intern
you wanna feel
in
old?
The White House.
Monica Lewinsky turned 40 this week.
I feel
did
old.
She really?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
But that dress is starched clean like it was right back from the Gap.
One element of that story that I'd never thought of until it got put in front of me, yeah. I was at a show one night, and a friend of mine, I was sitting next to her, and she was just introducing me to the table. And then later she goes, oh, that guy right there is Monica Lewinsky's brother. And all I wanted to do was ask him a question about his sister, but there's no way I was going to do that. But that was the thing I'd never thought of. I didn't even realize, oh, she has a brother. That must suck.
That he has to,
now, what's worse, having the last name Lewinsky, last name Madoff?
Ooh. Probably Madoff.
Yeah, I think Madoff. Because Monica was kind of...
She didn't hurt anyone.
Yeah. In fact, she gave pleasure.
Yeah.
She helped the nation.
Sure, Chelsea loves her. Very, very happy with her.
I want to say another thing. Another great thing in this whole thing is on Carlos Danger.
Oh,
that
right,
the woman's name that came out with all the new ugly is Sydney Leathers, which I assume is not her real name.
Why would you assume that?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds
you know,
like a
porn star. It's like a leather Tuscadero or something
right,
like that.
Yeah.
You know,
she's Pinky Tuscadero and leather Tuscadero.
Leather Tuscadero. She went on Howard Stern this week and, of course, was ripping Anthony Weiner, you know.
Did she go on the Sibian?
She's going to be... She's going to be... she's in talks to do a porn film now, of course.
Oh, brother.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'll be honest with you. If he was legitimately the best candidate, I would still vote for him. I don't think it's that... Like,
I don't even think he was that good of a candidate, though.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, if this was, like, if, you know... If no, if Obama sent dick pics and was running up against Mitt Romney, I would have still voted for Obama.
Sure, sure.
You know, that's what I'm saying.
But that's on a national level.
That's true, right. Yeah. That's a national dick pic.
And the last little cap to all this is that apparently it came out yesterday that one of Wiener's aides referred to this woman, Sydney Leathers, as a lying slut bag or something flattering.
I think she called her a cunt.
Yeah. So, you know.
He don't even have to
do bad judgment. These are the aides he's keeping around him.
I'd also like to say something about Anthony Weiner's wife who stood by him.
Yeah.
I think she's a very attractive woman.
Okay.
And she's...
You're being brave there. You're taking a stand.
And, you
this
know...
This is a big step for you.
If she has some issue with... if she likes non-powerful men, if she's ever interested in non-powerful men who wield only podcast power... Uma, give me a ring.
You okay with a kid, too?
Yeah, why not? A wiener kid. I could...
What's your sell to her? Like, besides just if you want someone with no power in the podcast world, what's your selling point to actually possibly get her? Say she listens to this.
Say she listens to this episode and it hits her at a low moment.
She's a big fan of mine and usually follows anything I do, so there's a chance she may listen to this. So if you want to sell yourself high, this might be your opportunity.
Uma, if you're listening, I live in beautiful Valley Village. You have a wonderful place to live here where we could build right next to schools are good. I live right near a very prestigious North Hollywood High School, and I actually think it is prestigious.
Alma mater of Susan Sontag and Adam Carolla.
So it would be good for the kids.
Knowing her as well as I do, you've already brought up living together. She's going to run.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, man. Oh, you blew it.
Just tell her you've never texted a dick pic.
Oh, yeah, throw that out there. She does
maybe
dig
you,
that.
Never mind.
No, I actually never have. But
the camera's not big enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't, you know. I need to bring in a whole team, a wide lens.
70mm. Where's David Lean?
Well, you know, there's a lot of scandals going on.
Some Arabia dick pic?
Yeah.
It starts off very small in the distance, and then it gets bigger and bigger.
Speaking of scandals, there is also the Biogenesis scandal going on. Now,
it's a video game thing.
Yeah, it sounds like it should be a video
it
game
really
thing, but it was the clinic Biogenesis where many Major League Baseball players were given human growth hormone and other illegal substances. Now, Major League Baseball is going on the warpath, cracking down on this, as they should. They have a system in place. It's, just, you know, 10 years ago, this wasn't actually technically against the rules, which is why, even though it's kind of cheating, I would still put Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in the Hall of Fame. But as far as I'm concerned now, if you test positive for any of these things, you're just an idiot. You're just an asshole. You're like Anthony Weiner still sending a dick pic. Why do you need to do this? Why do you feel the need to keep this up? And Ryan Braun was suspended
last year's MVP.
From Milwaukee Brewers. And he was suspended. He was given 50 days, which he decided not to fight. Why did he decide not to fight it? Because if he fought it, see, he gets paid more money next year. So if
And every subsequent year?
Yeah. So, like, this year maybe he's making $10 million, so he'll take the suspension. But next year he makes, like, 12, and the year after that, 14.
Basically, he's sacrificing $3 million in about a $90 million contract over the next 8 years.
We're recording this on Wednesday the 31st. The episode's going to be up in a couple of days. And by then, the word on the street is late-breaking, right before we recorded, Alex Rodriguez of my New York Yankees, supposedly, according to USA Today, and watch now, this doesn't happen, is about to be given a lifetime ban from baseball, which I think is a bit extreme, not just as a Yankee fan. I think a lifetime ban is a bit extreme because they say he lied, and they say he might have, I don't know, brought other players into the Biogenesis scandal, so they want to give him a lifetime ban. I say unfair.
Whatever. You know what? He knew what he was doing, and I think he was unrepentant, and how many more years did he have left in him anyway? You know, just basically forced retirement.
You know, on the plus side, Yankees don't have to pay his bloated salary. So maybe
this is
good
thing for them. And on the second note, I just want to say go Dodgers, which are currently playing the New York Yankees and hopefully winning.
Fuck them. I'll root for them when the Yankees leave town. You're not really a sports guy.
Oh, I remained silent during that entire thing. Yeah.
But, I mean, do you have any thoughts on, I don't know, steroids? Do steroids... I don't know, with in relation to this and being a big scandal. Because I know some people who are like, who cares? Just let them, who cares? We get home runs.
Sure. I'm a big juicer myself.
That's why you're such a good storyteller.
Exactly. I'm juicing it all the time. So if I lose that, I lose my edge. So
juicing
I'm kind
for
of
comedians is what, booze?
Human growth steroids.
Is there a comedy world equivalent of juicing? There isn't, because it's not a competition, so I guess.
Well, there's some that are better with alcohol, so that could be a juice.
Okay.
That's
a bunch of Coke or something.
Yeah.
Results may vary highly.
Yeah, you never know what you're getting.
You know what I like about this whole thing in thinking about this? There's a guy whose job it is in Major League Baseball to travel around to different stadiums and collect urine. That's this guy's one job. And Ryan Braun, with his thing, he threw that guy under the bus. He said, that guy fucked up my
They said he kept
sample.
It over the weekend or something.
Yeah, the guy couldn't get it to the post office in time, so he kept it over the weekend. And Ryan Braun, he fucked it up, and he tried to throw this guy, the poor urine collector. I'll be honest with you, it seems like a pretty good gig. Because you get to meet a bunch of big athletes. You get to, if you love baseball, you get to go to different stadiums, see different ball games.
I think we found your dream job.
I think we found my dream job. And Huma, if you're interested in dating a urine collector.
She might be.
No, does she have a fetish of her own?
She does.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a golden shower gal.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm
it's
in.
Work.
Huma, I'm in. It could
work.
Well,
I mean, she's into wieners. This is just, you know, one step up.
This is one step up. Me. One step up from Wiener. Another scandal. Oh, the scandal's all over
the
place.
Oh, my gosh.
And this had nothing to do with Kerry Washington.
The Lone Ranger movie came out. It bombed.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because a very important advocacy group decided not to go see it. No, not Native Americans, who we all know make up the majority of the demographics who go to movies nowadays. A cleft lip advocacy group has taken issue with facial scars being used again as a visual shorthand for evil. The William Fichtner character has a cleft lip, and he's evil in the movie.
That he got from a knife wound or was born with a cleft palate?
We just see him. I mean, we don't know how it happened.
You didn't get the Orange is the New Black backstory on his
we
character?
We didn't get the whole backstory on how he became the way he is.
So it could
old cleft lip Jones.
But it could have been from a wound later and not something from the wound.
Not a congenital defect, which was an exterior mark of his black, hardened soul.
Right.
And it could have been.
Who knows?
But this group, I guess, argues that no.
You know what? Listen, we got to stop kowtowing to every little fucking interest group. I mean, where does this end? Everyone, you know, I mean, this poor... Everyone's oversensitive. I mean, even before they made this movie was released, poor Johnny Depp had to pay the Indians off just to let him do this. He had to go and he had to buy Wounded Knee and gift it to the Sioux Indian tribe.
Is that right?
Yeah, he paid like $3 million for the site of Custer's Massacre and gifted it to the tribe just to, like, get them to endorse his bomb of a movie.
Who did he buy?
It belonged to, like, Old Farmer Joe or something.
So someone was a sole owner of that.
Yeah, I may have not all the... Well, I may not have all the details here. My understanding is that the land was for sale for about $3 million. He bought it, and because, you know, he is part Native American.
Sure.
There's
like, cheekbones.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody's like, I'm like 1/8 Cherokee. Everyone's 1/8 Cherokee.
Yeah, you know, if you actually have Native American blood, you have an ID card that states that you are Native American and entitles you to Native American benefits, like, you know, an increased propensity towards alcoholism and gambling benefits.
Which comes with the card.
It's true.
I remember when Mel Gibson had his troubles that continue, it seems. I was on my way to go see Apocalypto. I was very excited.
It's a goddamn juice, that's why.
And my friend Darren, who's Jewish, said, I can't go. I'm not going to go with you guys to see Apocalypto because I, you know, he had, you know, I guess he was part of a group of people who said, I can't deal with this. And I'm against it. And it got me thinking at that time, is there something that, like, I wouldn't go see? Is there, like, an organization that I'm not necessarily a part of, but would feel kinship with, like, I can't see this because they denigrate this group? The closest I got was I refused to see the movie Fever Pitch because it celebrated Red Sox fans, and I've already mentioned I'm a Yankees fan. But not really. Do you have anything like that?
There's nothing that would offend me so that I would not go see it based on that. I would not go see it based on that just looks stupid, but there's nothing that, oh, I am going to protest outside the theater.
See, I do have issues with the Mel Gibson movies, and I will either buy tickets for another movie and sneak in or just straight out steal the film because I kind of don't want to give him the money.
But you still watch the movie.
Yeah,
because
but
you're a fan of cinema.
I am a fan of cinema, but I'm not a fan of putting pennies in his pocket. He's got enough pennies. He doesn't need my shekels, all right?
You know,
I don't think he wants my shekels.
You know who he says has a lot of pennies?
The Jews.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, he's not getting any mine.
None of your Jewish pennies.
None of my Jewish blood money.
You need
we'll
all.
We'll trade, Mel. I'll give you my money. You give me your firstborn child for some of our ceremonies.
He does have a bunch of kids.
He does. He won't miss one.
I guess you won't know until somebody comes out with something that truly does offend you if it's going to offend
you. I'm
sorry,
did I just reemphasize blood libels?
Yes.
Okay.
The only time... All right, here was something that was the first time I felt, I'm offended at this. It was the... Are You There, God, It's Me, Chelsea, whatever her TV show was.
Yeah.
Where Laura Prepon played her.
Yes. Laura Prepon also on Orange is the New Black.
Oh, my gosh. Don't get me started. But in the first episode, the pilot, she goes out with a red-haired guy. And in a voiceover, she says, I'm going to kind of paraphrase it, but me, like every other woman, has never seen an attractive red-haired man or something like that.
Ah.
But that was the... And I remember sitting there watching it, giving the show a chance with, oh, I'm out of here.
So you weren't offended by the South Park guys doing an entire episode on the evilness of gingers?
No, because that's just become...
common knowledge.
Yeah, if I was a kid, it'd be different. If I was a 14-year-old kid who had to deal with repercussions of that kind of episode, then yeah, I'd hate it. But as a grown man, nothing affected me.
Like, I'm old enough to buy a gun. I don't give a shit anymore.
Which I still don't know where ginger comes from. Where that originates, why that
is. Yeah, why is that? Gingy, like gingies. I always thought of a redhead. I just always knew that nickname for redhead was a gingy.
But why?
But why? Where's the...
I don't know.
It derive?
What, the Oxford English Dictionary? I don't know.
Yeah.
Look it up. Open a blog.
Like, was Ginger on Gilligan's Island named Ginger because she had red hair?
Must have been. It's too much of a coincidence.
It's a big coincidence. Or was the term Ginger...
Because that's what they named...
Because that's what the name of a famous redhead was on a television
show. Why wouldn't they be Lucy? Why wouldn't they be Lucy's?
Why wouldn't they be Lucy's, yeah.
Or O'Balls.
I'll tell you why. Because when Lucy started...
Black and white.
Black and white.
Yeah.
So, but when Ginger... Maybe it does come from her.
They started black and white too, though. There's like 4 episodes where they're black and white.
I never saw those episodes.
Well, I am a television catalog of knowledge.
This is it. If anyone knows, please email us at...
Let us know what the origin of ginger is. Tweet at us, Facebook us, tell us. We need to know.
And maybe we'll give you a shout-out.
We'll give you a shout-out on a show.
We don't have t-shirts or merch.
And I am a red-haired man.
Oh, right. We should have said that.
We must make that clear of here's why I am standing up.
In case you can't see through the audio. So, I was out with a friend the other day, and we went out for lunch. We'd seen a movie, and we went out for lunch. And we sat down, And he seemed troubled. My friend seemed very troubled as we looked at the menu, and he was going through it, like, with a fine-tooth comb. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, just order, like, fucking, you know, order this burger, or order, like, you know. And he's like, nah, I've discovered through various tests that I've run on myself, and I'm getting confirmed by a doctor, that I can't eat gluten. I am allergic to gluten. It is affecting me horribly. And at this moment, because he's a very close friend of mine, so close, in fact, that I run a very important organization with him, a very important podcast with him, very close, because no bond is closer than a podcast bond. I became concerned, because then he had to talk to the waitress, and she had to go check with the kitchen on things, and it dawned on me that now this is my friend Sean. This is his life now. He is going to have to do this. Every time we go out, he is going to have to worry about gluten and worry about the bread. Is it a gluten-free bun? I don't even know what the fuck a gluten-free bun is or how it could even exist. But now he is going to have to worry about this. And that is why gluten is the enemy of the podcast this week. Fuck you, gluten. Hey, you're ruining my friend's life. You're hurting him physically. You're physically hurting him. And now, every time I go out to eat with him, I gotta hear some preamble before to the poor waitress who now, and you're gonna have to tip more because you got the wait staff working harder. This is ruining your life. And quite frankly, I don't think I can eat out with
yes,
you anymore.
Yes, so, I have an undiagnosed gluten intolerance that I'm actually going to see a doctor about tomorrow. I'm pretty sure it's gluten. That seems to make me feel, not eating it makes me feel fine, but it could be wider or narrower than that. It may be specific. So I don't know all the details.
Is it cancer? Could it be cancer?
That would be, you know, a different diagnosis altogether. But okay. Going to the doctor tomorrow, I should know more. So far, I know that if I don't eat gluten, I feel fine. So there you have it. It's not celiacs. Calm down, all you people. The irony of all this is that I would oftentimes tease people that, you know, I never heard of gluten until 5 years ago, until every other girl I know seems to be allergic to it. And now the chickens have come home to roost.
Gluten has sought revenge upon you.
It has.
For mocking these women.
Yes.
I went out on a date with a girl who had a gluten allergy. Went to an Italian restaurant because I didn't know. I brought her to an Italian restaurant. I didn't know she had a gluten thing. Couldn't eat all half the stuff there. Cheapest date ever. It was great.
Yeah, she just had a salad.
Are you allergic to gluten?
Not that I know of. No. I don't think so.
I guess it could happen at any time. We're all screwed. Because you were on this podcast, you're collateral damage. Gluten's coming for
man.
You.
That's it. Coming for
well,
me
you
now.
Know, it's just, I have to eat like a rabbit now. Everything's sort of bland, and thank God I wasn't a foodie. But this just complicates everything.
It's a good thing you hate food.
I don't hate food, but I'm the type of person that never put a lot of energy into figuring out what I was going to eat or where I was going to eat, and now I have to obsess over it constantly, and it's just a pain in the ass.
I've started as of late seeing food just as fuel.
Yeah, that's how I was.
Yeah, that I don't. I'm not a foodie.
Yeah.
I love it when I get good food, but
the
I don't seek it
way.
Out.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm a foodie because I...
You eat a lot of boar's head. You're very dedicated to that boar's head.
I'm very dedicated to boar's head. That is the finest of the cold cuts.
Sure.
But, I mean, I think I can... I mean, because I don't think I eat for fuel. I just want to eat things that taste good.
Sure.
But I also think, like, Taco Bell tastes good. So I don't think... I don't have a sophisticated palate, maybe. I don't know.
I can't do it anymore. I hit a point where I can no longer do Taco Bell. My system has just decided...
It's like, no more?
No more. You're done. You remember it fondly, but you're done with it.
Well,
no more fourth meal for you.
No more fourth meal. No more going to get my Mexi Melt, which I love the taste of so much. That thing's now gone.
Have you ever had the beefy crunch burrito?
No, but that sounds delicious.
Try it.
I can't. My body.
Oh, that's
will,
right. You can.
My body will reject
Taco
it.
Taco Bell is your gluten.
That's what it is.
Sean, your gluten is actual gluten. Your gluten, Kevin, is Taco Bell.
I feel like a superhero with a really shitty weakness.
Do you have any, like, dietary restrictions beyond Taco Bell that you, like, place on yourself? Or like, because there's
well,
some
you keep
people...
halal.
Say what?
You keep halal.
Yeah, that's yeah. all. Yeah.
Do you have anything? Or?
No, I try not to... the older I get, the better I try to eat. I've introduced a lot of fruits and vegetables into my diet, which was not the game I played when I was a younger man.
It's not the game I play and continue to play.
Well, Will, if you're going to date Huma, you got to keep halal as well.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. You're okay? We're cool with that?
Yeah.
Muslim dietary restrictions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need pork anymore.
Okay. You're halfway there.
I'm
going to send you to special markets in Culver City.
I hate these people who put, though, these dietary restrictions on themselves. Like, you now have an actual problem.
Well, what I love is people said, oh, now you can eat healthy. I'm like, no, technically I can eat pan-fried steak every day for the rest of my life.
Right.
And people go, I'm thinking of going gluten-free. I'm like, why? You're an idiot. You know what? Just eat less of shit and eat more of good. It's very simple, people.
You know another food group of people I don't get? Like, I get vegetarians. I can never be one and would never be one, God forbid. But I don't get vegans. Like, I understand the vegetarian. I understand not eating meat, but the vegans, they've really made my life
In France, they prosecuted this mother, or these parents, who they killed. Their baby died from malnutrition because she was a strict vegan and the baby wasn't getting enough nutrients from the mother's desiccated, you know, awful breast milk. They're imprisoning them for child endangerment.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Go France.
You ever have any vegan run-ins? You know, do you eat vegan places?
I don't.
Some are tasty.
I've been lucky that the people I eat most of my meals with are not vegan or vegetarian, so it's a pretty easy thing.
The dirty secret about a lot of vegan food and this gluten-free food is they have to process. It's not necessarily healthy for you because they got to process the shit out of it to make that yam flour really congeal and hold together. So it's actually, you know, it's vegan, but it's not great for you.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend who she was just about to start a film shoot or whatever. And, budget is a problem. So I say, go the route I always went, especially back in college. You know, bagels in the morning and pizza in the afternoon, because everyone likes pizza. And she goes, I can't do that, because we have multiple vegans working on this. So, this is really inconvenience.
Oh, sure. I have a friend, I have someone who has to deal with a lot of dietary stuff where it actually really affects her.
Right.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah, and it becomes a big issue because when she tells it to people, they immediately think, ugh.
Yeah.
It's like fibromyalgia. It's that the disease that is horrible, but a lot of people can claim it. You know what?
I don't know it.
It's the one where, this is me really oversimplifying it, but it is you're just really tired all the time. Just you can't.
Maybe it's mono.
Could be mono, but it's also, I mean, it's a disease. But it's also one that people can just claim and undiagnose themselves.
Like ADD.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff we can just give ourselves now that so the people who really do have it just become lumped in.
Well, just wait till you have your Emmys party and you get your normal pizza spread, and I'm going to be showing up with my glutino crackers and God knows what else I'm going to put on there.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to order pizza. You can't eat that.
I'll find my own stuff. I'll just bring cheese. I'll just melt cheese on crackers.
You realize every event I ever host at my place, I just order pizza.
Yeah.
So you're fucked.
I'll bring my own stuff.
Could you eat chicken wings?
Could.
I'm going to order some chicken wings, too.
Can I get them without the sauce on the side?
No, that's ridiculous.
This is a thing. And people, don't cry for me. Please don't cry for me.
Okay.
Before we go, I was at the end with a weird story, I find.
Great.
This one was weird.
This was suitably weird.
A woman named Sarah Lee Linneberg was arrested for an incident that took place in a McDonald's drive-thru. She was topless as a passenger in a car that pulled up to the drive-thru. And when they got there, the driver proceeded to, in front of the McDonald's worker, pour caramel over her breasts, lick it off, and then they just drove away.
Wait, this is Andrea Marchant that did this?
Yes, this was. Marchant did this. They poured caramel over her breasts, licked it off, and drove away. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that's just a weird thing you see on a Friday night working at McDonald's. These employees, they didn't take this atrocity lying down. They called 911, and the police tracked her down, and she was arrested.
For what? Public indecency?
Yeah, basically.
Call that a sticky situation.
Now, here's my thing. I think what's funnier is my reaction isn't that she did something really weird, but it's that the McDonald's employees cared enough to go through the whole rigmarole.
That I wonder if it's something they did. Like, we got just a little bit of, he proceeded to lick it off. Like, that's kind of a process. That would take a while. So I could see that that might be what escalated them.
Maybe
to
they
want
called.
To...
Maybe they were sitting there for a while, and they go, and they're just like, "Well, we better call the cops because who knows?"
Were there people behind?
Yeah,
them?
Maybe they didn't know how long these people were going to be there for.
Well, that wasn't in the article. It just said they drove off.
Oh, but these are the details I want now because that seems like a lot of caramel that he got off completely.
It also didn't say the amount of caramel in the article.
We need more details.
We need more details now.
Did this happen in Florida?
No, I believe this happened in I believe it was Virginia.
Well, it's a shitty state, too, so.
So.
Virginia's for lovers.
Yes!
Of caramel-covered tits.
That's always left off the license plate.
Well, you know, it's a lot of letters.
Yeah.
But, I feel like...
You know what? Somebody probably died, probably bled out from a terrible cut, and they died because the cops were too busy with, you know, sugar tits.
Ah, your speculation makes me angry now that I think that that's a possibility.
Yeah.
These McDonald's workers are the ones who should be arrested.
They should.
Okay, now I feel strongly about something.
Yeah. Now
I finally am feeling it.
If you see the persecution of caramel-covered tits in media, then you're going to go...
See something, say something.
I will never watch a McDonald's movie, ever. I will refuse to
go.
So
no more Mac and Me?
No more Mac and Me. No more, oh, what is that one with Paul Reiser? It's really old, where the old guy works at McDonald's. Bye Bye Love?
Oh, I haven't seen it.
No.
Oh,
it's
the first movie I ever walked out on in my life, and I can't believe I forgot the name of it. I think it's Bye Bye Love. But there, it's one of the stories is a really old man works at McDonald's, and it's a really sad story. He tries to fit in with all the teenagers, and it just was depressing as all shit.
Sounds fantastic.
It's not. But the whole point of that was, I'm not seeing a McDonald's movie
You'll
ever
never
again.
See it again.
Nope.
And no more, I'll tell you what, not that I'm eating Big Macs already, I'm certainly not eating Big Macs now.
You're done?
I'm done.
What if this had happened at a Taco Bell drive-thru?
Wow, that's a different story.
Your whole world.
Well, no, I'll tell you what, the Taco Bell employees, they would never call the cops on this.
They're too busy putting their dicks on things to call the police.
Making secret sauce.
Anthony Weiner's getting a job at Taco Bell.
Well, after Huma leaves him to come live with you.
Me and Huma are going to drive up to the Taco Bell drive-thru. I'm going to pour caramel on her tits. Well, Anthony
Carlos.
Weiner has got his dick in a taco shell.
Well, Carlos has to service you.
Knowing her as well as I do. She'll probably dig that.
This is it. See, I've hooked Huma. Yep. I've hooked Huma.
And the little wiener kid in the back seat.
I'm all for all of this. Plus, she's close to Hillary, and I'm a big Hillary Clinton supporter.
It's all coming up, Will.
She's going to be so mad you're just using her just to get to Hill.
No. I'm like-minded is what I'm saying.
Right, you already like her friends.
I already like her friends.
Exactly. I like her friends, the Clintons.
The correspondence dinner will go just fine.
Just fine.
This is going to be great. Kevin.
Yes.
I'm so glad you came on the show.
Me too.
Before we wrap it all up, plug away, plug everything again, where they could find everything that is funny because it's true.
Let's see. Facebook. Funny, C-U-Z, it's true. You can go and like it. I've got well over 400 likes now.
Oh,
and
shit.
And growing daily.
You son of a bitch.
Get off the... Go. Just leave.
On a very quick tangent, one day I woke up, I went to sleep, and I had like 199. And I woke up the next day with, oh, I'm going to break 200 today. And I wake up, and it's like at 246. Like, oh, my God. What happened overnight? I don't know what it was, but a ton of Filipino children... all decided to like the podcast and just like the page, like young children. Like, it seems that my demographic is 14-year-old Filipino girls.
Wow.
Are these the same girls you're playing on Ruzzle?
Who knows? Maybe. If they are, they're very good at the language.
We need to tap into that young Filipino.
I'm trying. I'm talking to
people.
They
really love liking pages. So, the Funny Because It's True page on Facebook. You can listen to the podcast on iTunes, Funny C-U-Z, It's True. And you can also go to the Comedy Podcast Network and look at all their other shows as well.
And the next show, you said August 13th.
August 13th, and the theme is high school. Very broad.
Nice.
And I would imagine people all have stories related to that.
And if they are interested in performing, they should prepare a 5 to 6 minute story and show up, and maybe you two will be part of the showcase showdown.
Exactly.
And once again, your Twitter handle, because I assume you tweet
it's
about
McGann
all this.
Kevin. It's once again like... everything with you forget phone numbers and stuff because you're so used to it just popping up. But
I like
yeah.
Wiener.
I used to know every phone number of all my friends.
Yeah, now that's
I still know the phone number by heart of the next door neighbor of the family that I grew up with, and not you know, and I don't know like my mom's phone number.
We should call it
994-9229.
Yes, now I know this exact information. It's at McGeehan Kevin. At McGeehan Kevin.
All right.
Okay. Sean, do the thing where you plug your stuff.
Stuff. You can follow me at Twitter at TheSeanDavid. I also expect to be performing at the FET on August 8th.
That's right. Nope. That's not the right date.
What date is it?
It's August 10th.
10th. Okay, that's right. Saturday night, August 10th. And hopefully a Tattletale show as well sometime in August. But I will keep you all posted. You can also buy and read my book, Triumvirs, T-R-I-U-M-V-I-R-S, at Amazon, Amazon Kindle. So go ahead and do that, because then I'll love you.
Are you feeling a little heat from the other authors that we've had a lot of authors on lately?
I could take them. Okay. Maybe not Dylan Brody, but I could take the rest.
Alex Stein, you could take him?
Nah.
So that's two.
No, I think Alex Stein is... He'd be a good fight. It'll maybe be a draw.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You can follow me at The Real Will Link. You can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on the PM show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I review movies, although we're a little behind on our movie reviewing schedule, but listen in. You'll hear reviews of Fruitvale Station and some other big movies coming up.
It's Farina Through a Clot.
You can also... you can also read articles of mine at u1can.com. Can spelled like the city in France. And I am hoping to also be reading something at said FET on August 10th. My mother is in town, and I'm just debating if I can ditch her and go read there.
You should write a review of Orange is the New Black for U1Con.
There's already a wonderful article about Orange is the New Black. Written by the woman who runs the site and a former podcast guest, Madeline Kessner.
You know, it's not Mimalu Whimsy?
And she wrote a very funny article. It's 10 Reasons Why Orange is the New Black Makes Prison Look Like a Lot of Fun. And you should check that article out on the show next week. Very excited. We gushed about this girl last week. We have a girl coming on. Or woman, young lady, I don't want to offend. She,
Filipino.
Not Filipino. Doesn't have all that much to promote, but me and Sean saw her at a improv show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. Her name is Katie
Markovich.
Markovich. And she was very funny, and we just knew we wanted to have her on to bullshit with her, and hopefully this gives her something to promote. So we're very excited to have her on. And the week after that, Sean, maybe you could tell us about Shannon.
Shannon Roosevelt
Finley. Is that her? That's the only name I have listed for her.
No, so Shannon Roosevelt Finley. She is she's primarily a model, a lot of print and commercials. And she has a lot of fascinating stories of being... She started as a child model, and she's very striking. And she was also on True Blood this season.
She was naked and covered in blood.
She was.
I saw it.
But she's someone I've known for a while, and she just has really interesting stories about what it's like being a professional model and just going on these shoots and going to crazy locations. And it'll be a very interesting show.
And we haven't had a model on before. We've had a lot of people from different worlds, but we haven't had a model on. We've had an opera singer on. We've had a dominatrix on. Haven't had a model. Had a porn star on. Haven't had a model. So I'm curious to see what we learn from her.
You could now add a ginger.
We have a ginger. List. Did we ever have a ginger?
Alex Alexander?
Yeah, I guess
she's gingerish. We haven't had like a legit, like full-on Damian Lewis ginger on the show,
Great.
Damian Lewis.
I'm so happy that he got popular and won an Emmy, because now that he upped red-haired aunties a little bit.
Well,
you know what's
for males.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was looking at you and I'm like, and the night I met you, I was thinking the same thing. I said, who does he kind of look like?
You always got to ask me. I'm very good at figuring out who people look like or what combination of people look like. So that's it.
So, Kevin, thank you so much one more time.
And for the Will Sean Podcast, I'm Sean David.
I'm Will Link.
And we're finished.